Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and on this podcast, we talk about sex. Okay, so let's dive in. This is a bit of a bonus episode. Last week, we did an episode on sex after baby. What happens to your sex life after you have a baby? And two things happened. One, Charlotte had to leave the room at the end of that recording because our own baby was sick and crying and needed her. And
which is the first time that has happened in almost 250 episodes, which I thought was pretty spot on and kind of amazing that it was on this subject. I just felt like it was so perfect.
Yeah. And you felt a little disgruntled after we posted that podcast because you had so much more to say. And then I thought, well, we can't do a whole nother episode because if there are so many people who are listening who aren't parents or who are have grown kids and they're not be interested. And so we thought, let's do a bonus episode where we'll put another episode up this week, but let's give them part two for people who are interested in this topic and you have much more you want to say. So let's get into it.
Yes, I feel like this is such an important topic, and I did feel incomplete with the last one. So,
why is this so important to you?
Well, I feel like this is the moment where you make or break a relationship in a way, which is quite dramatic to say, but I feel like when a couple becomes a family, and I understand you can become a family, you can be a family with two people, and people have dogs and they feel like they're a family. But what I'm talking about is when you become a family with a child, life changes so much.
So much.
So much. It becomes a whole new thing. And there is this glorious, hopefully for most people, not everyone, experience of family, but then you have to really fight for, with time and energy and intention, your relationship as a couple. Like, you have to really choose and be intentional about being a couple at some point. That might be months or years, depending on your particular relationship, and that has to be okay, which I think is a difference of expectation than most people have.
When you're saying fighting for being a couple, you have to fight to have a sex life.
You have to fight to have a... fight is a really... it's not the most ideal word, of course, but...
You have to prioritize having a sex life.
Yeah, because it takes so much effort to put that at the top of the priority list when there is so much else to do. And so many other beings and laundry and food, you know, to keep that at the top of the priority list is really a choice. And I think that at a certain point, if you don't make that choice, it is inevitable that the relationship begins to dissolve.
Or transitions into a companionate marriage where you're parents and friends and have a family together and a life together, but you're no longer erotically connected.
Yes, which is a choice that, or not a choice, but is an inevitable, is something that happens for many relationships.
Well, it's one outcome that many people are happy with. And so part of this for me is... an approach to relationships and outcomes in relationships that only make things a struggle if the members of that relationship are unhappy. Right? So it's only a problem if you're not having sex, if you're unhappy that you're not having sex.
Right.
If you're both fine with it and you're transitioning into a companionate marriage or an open marriage or some other form of relationship, that doesn't necessarily mean your marriage has dissolved.
Completely fair and an excellent point.
So, but you're saying, I think what you're speaking to, and we also need to acknowledge, we are two women in a relationship, and as parents, and I try to have a lot of empathy for the male experience, for partners' experiences, but that empathy can only go so far, and I understand that. And so I welcome men writing to us with their experiences. But I think what you're really revved up at is the physical experience of going through pregnancy and birth, being a primary caretaker, breastfeeding for 2 years, and trying to find what it means to you to be a sexual erotic being within that shifting sense of identity.
I feel so much compassion and urgency for other women and other couples around how do you claim this back again when there's so much care and love going towards your child or children. And I feel like there isn't enough compassion around that women perhaps need a lot of time to heal and be in this process. I think it could be so easy for mostly men, you know, there's so many different ways the relationships are and people are having families at this point, but if we're going to gender this, that the non-primary caretaker, that often men feel rejected or feel like they're not being taken care of sexually. And I feel like there's this opportunity for men to really take care of the woman or the primary caretaker and take care of the family as best as they can.
So what were a few of the specific struggles you encountered in rebalancing your identity from just being a full-time intense baby caretaker to reclaiming yourself as an erotic woman and a woman and not just a mom?
Mm-hmm.
What were a few of the specific struggles you encountered in the past 2 years?
So I feel like there's this piece around creating time and space for me, I'll just speak about me, for me to take time to feel like a sexual person. And because I feel like we have this deep philosophy that we each have our own sexuality and then we join together as a partnership, but that it isn't the partnership that's responsible for our sexuality, I felt like that I had to create time and space for me to connect to myself and have an erotic practice and have a sense of eroticism just for myself before I could, like, I needed to wake that up again in myself before I felt like I could connect with you. And to carve that space and time out is a challenge. I felt like I was looking for pockets of time, mostly at night when my kids had gone to sleep, finding a physical space in our home that felt like it could be a private, sexy space. Sometimes that involved using a blanket on the floor of our office, which wasn't the most ideal, but it was workable and it felt like an adult space as opposed to a family space that didn't feel totally right for me. So it was about having an adult-only space where I could shut the door.
Well, and making it a priority. So in that time, there was always the option of getting some more work done or catching up on emails or cleaning the kitchen. Right. And you often came to me and were like, there's all these other things I need to do. And I had to give you permission to put your own self-care at the top of that list. And so you're this huge advocate for self-care. You have these years of self-care practices like self-massage, masturbation. You know how to do this, and still you needed external permission to make it happen.
Totally. There were moments. I mean, there were moments where I felt like I was clear that I needed to take care of myself. And certainly self-massage was actually an enormous part of my 2 years. And that was really essential and kind of life-giving, absolutely life-giving for me in terms of just massaging my own body with oil or not, depending on the amount of energy I had, and really taking that time to nourish my body. That was really essential for me to feel like a person and to feel relaxed again, because it's to feel relaxed again so that I could feel erotic or feel sexual again. So having some kind of self-care practices felt really important. And I was clear that it didn't really feel like enough in a way. Like, it was my lifeline, but it also felt like, oh, I would love another few hours a week at least to really luxuriate in a self-care practice. And that felt challenging to find. So there's a little bit of just trying to make it through and keep some connection to your eroticism, to your body as a vessel that is not a vessel of pleasure, not just a life-giving vessel. And then I felt like there became this real distinction between my mothering self and my sexual self. So when we were ready to get in the mood and be reconnecting again, I really needed to take at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half, depending, to prepare myself before being sexual, to allow myself time to transition from being in a mother role to being in a sexual space with my partner. And I think without that amount of time or some kind of ritual, for me that looked like a shower and stretching and dancing and then we always move into massage, or, you know, mostly before moving into sex. And that whole, I mean, which I understand is a timely experience, but I felt like I really needed that to be able to shift from motherhood to being a sexual person and being able to connect. And that felt really graceful and delicious.
Which I don't think everyone needs that much time.
No.
I don't think everyone feels the divide between those two roles as strongly as you do. But I think there's something to be said about what are small steps you can take to flip the emotional switch from I am mother, caretaker, nurturer, to I'm an erotic being and can feel sexy. Because I think one of the things I saw from a lot of the people we talked to about this topic is they were having sex pretty soon after childbirth and having sex with their partners, but I'm not so sure how much that sex was for them versus for their partners. And what we're really talking about is reclaiming yourself as an erotic being, so the sex you're having is for you, and you can feel sexy, you can feel like a sexual subject, and you're not just kind of accommodating your partner's needs.
Yeah, you want to be having really good sex, or I want to be having really good sex.
And you don't really go in between. I think that's the thing. It's like, I never just do you.
We don't really do quickies at this point.
Well, and it's not our sexual nature. Like, I don't have sex with you for my own needs if you're not in it.
Right.
Like, that feels, like, so foreign to me. But I think especially a lot of heterosexual couples have a model of sex where one partner can be a little bit checked out. Uh-huh. And still give it as a gift. And, you know, I have a lot of feelings around that, but I don't want to make it a completely bad thing. But the kind of sexual engagement you're talking about is for you to really feel sexy and turned on and orgasmic and in your sexual experience, not just to be sexually available. So we're not just talking about like the vagina healing enough that it could be penetrated without pain.
Yeah.
Right? We're talking about you reclaiming your wellspring of erotic energy and being a sexual woman, which for a lot of women, like sometimes it's never woken up in the first place. And for a lot of mothers, that doesn't happen until their kids are out of the house.
Yeah.
And I think that's the pattern we're seeing that might be alarming, or it never happens again.
Right.
Like, they're sexual as younger women, they meet their partner, they become mothers, and they may or may not be having sex, but the idea of becoming a sexual woman again, and partly it's our cultures to blame because we have such this divide between mother and whore, and mothers aren't supposed to be sexual and they're not supposed to take time for themselves.
Uh-huh.
And so there's all of these messages of like, once you're a mother, you're not a sexy woman again, and you're trying to combine the two. And I think that's probably why you get so revved up about this issue, is you're trying to heal a cultural breach that's happened over the past few thousand years.
Yeah, and it feels
no small task.
Right, and it feels deeply personal in the way that I feel like I watched my mother, for instance, go so deep into mothering. That was her primary role. She did it so fully, and she never I don't know what she was like before kids, but she never claimed the sexuality back. My parents didn't take time to connect as partners, and they totally drifted apart and got divorced. And I really saw it really affected my family. There wasn't space for sexuality. She was only mother. And she did that beautifully and excellently. And I thank her eternally for that. But I feel sad that she didn't get that. And then as an erotic masseuse, I saw thousands of men that were coming to receive massage, erotic massage, because the story I heard again and again and again was they loved their partners, they loved their wives, but their wives after kids did not were just too tired and were not interested in sex anymore.
And what we also hear from men is that even if their wives are willing to have sex, they want something more than willingness. They want full participation. And so it does affect both partners. And yeah, I think it's a really big challenge you're kind of inviting people into, of trying to balance these roles. And you know, we're not even going to cover it all in part two,
no.
Right? This is why we need a whole course about this, and it needs to be this huge, big thing. But I do want to break it down. So some of the things you've talked about are stepping out of your role of a mother deliberately and creating time to get more into the erotic zone, which you have your self-care practices. Other people need to find what works for them to actually feel sexy.
Yeah, and that's such an exploration. As you said, it's totally personal. It takes some energy to figure out what will help you feel sexy and sexual again. I mean, there's this other little underlying question of why does it matter and why is this important? And that's a much bigger question that we can't answer in this one. But I think that what I notice for myself, I feel deeply fulfilled by the role of mother and the experience of mothering. And when I add my sexuality in, I feel like such a whole person. And I don't necessarily fully notice that I'm missing it when I'm not remembering it. But then when I feel it present again, I feel this real relaxation and relief and feeling of wholeness. And so I think that's what I'm wanting for women.
Okay, so for a lot of women, things like getting their nails done, manicures, dressing a specific way would be part of that kind of reclaiming themselves as an erotic being. Like, motherhood is very functional and you end up in yoga pants and, you know, breast milk stained shirts and nursing bras. You are not that interested in clothes and kind of that kind of thing, but I just want to acknowledge those kinds of self-care practices count too. Yeah. Getting your hair done, getting your nails done, the things that before made you feel sexy. Like, one way to think about this is, what would you do getting ready for dates early on in your relationship? What are the things that kind of revved you up and made you feel sexy? And trying to start doing some of those things while your baby's asleep, while you have child care, making them a priority, even though you know your to-do list is never going to be complete.
Right. You are certainly leaving things to the side that need to be attended to in order to take care of yourself. And that is challenging. And you're doing these things to make yourself feel more alive, not to please your partner.
Well, what I noticed, speaking about the partners, is there would be times where you just felt like you weren't enjoying life anymore. Like, you were kind of going through the motions every day, and it was like, oh, another day with our kid. And I'd be like, hey, this is supposed to be the most fulfilling, amazing experience of your life. What's going on? And we noticed a pattern that when you weren't taking time for self-care, your enjoyment of all the rest of the life would dissolve. Yeah. And so we have this concept at Pleasure Mechanics that by making pleasure a priority and filling your well, you can then bring a better self to the other roles in your life, like parenting, like being a spouse, a coworker, a friend. And that pleasure has to be a priority because it matters, because it makes all the rest of your life better. And it was like a night and day difference. I could see it on your face when you spent all night on your email or doing some business-related thing, and you hadn't done your self-care practices. And it was like, all right, we need to rearrange our schedule here and make time for you again. And we had to come back to that again and again and again.
And I had to ask for help and permission, as you said, in moments of like, please, can you just take her for a little bit? I just need to work out and meditate and dance. And it feels so indulgent in moments as, you know, I'm so deep in this loving pleasure and loving sexuality. And still it's so challenging in moments, especially with motherhood present. So I just want people to have compassion for themselves and for their partners, that there's a role for care, that partners giving permission and giving space for a primary caretaker to have time for herself is so important. Like, that is a main role that you can play in the beginning to assist in her feeling good about herself, which is primary before being interested in sex again.
And speaking on the partner's behalf again, I can really see, especially if one partner is working full-time and coming home to a stay-at-home parent, it's really easy to be like, I was just working all day. You were hanging out with a baby. What did you do all day? Like, you just played with a baby and changed a few diapers. How hard could that be? The truth of it is, taking care of a baby is so much work physically. Like, you're never stopping. It's always one thing or another. But it's also just kind of being in one zone all day. And you're not chatting with other adults. And you're not reading your interesting feed on your phone, and you're not kind of engaging with the world. You're in this baby zone, and spending more than a few hours there kind of reveals the emotional work of caretaking. And so I encourage dads as soon as possible to start taking more and more of that on, both to relieve the primary caretaker, but also to get a visceral sense of that kind of work and what it means to be in that zone all day long.
And to connect with your own child and have that.
Yeah, all of those benefits too. But I think it's just easy for someone who's been at work and like that has its own labor attached to it to come home and be like, what's the big deal? You were just changing diapers. Yeah. Like, that's not that hard. And you didn't even get to clean the kitchen. And this has been women's stories for like hundreds of years that their labor has been undervalued. But the surprising thing for me was how different parts of me are kept alive by all my different interactions. Like, I'm emailing customers and talking about sex and doing research and looking at numbers and analytics and making phone calls. And, like, I'm kind of awakened and alive in all these ways. And then I play with the kid and am a mother on the side. But when you're a mother full-time and none of those other parts of you are sparked, it's really easy to lose your eroticism because your life is so one focus.
Yeah.
And so I think part of what you're saying of getting out and reclaiming yourself as a sexual being, but you also just have to reclaim yourself as an adult.
Yeah, absolutely.
And have adult conversations and be exposed to adults' ideas and language and read things that aren't, you know, picture books.
Yeah, it feels like when I do those things, it feels like my brain is getting sparked again.
Yeah.
And that feels so good.
Which I think that happens when you go back to work and more mothers are staying home for like their maternity leave and going back to work, and that has its own issues, but at least they're getting outside stimulation. We made the choice that you were kind of a full-time stay-at-home mom for 2.5 years now, and so you really had to step outside of that zone deliberately.
And everyone's going to find their different balance of what that looks like. Some people will feel more comfortable with daycare or not, depending on your financial situation, but trying to find ways to have time alone is so essential. Swapping childcare with friends, like, we have to get collaborative about these things so that we can make it more possible for women to feel good, so they can parent better and so they can have space for their relationship.
I think it would be remiss not to mention body image. Mm. I think this is this huge category that comes up after babies. Like, you've just seen your body change, you've gained all this weight, your stomach is all stretched out, your vagina changes. And this wasn't a huge issue for you, partly because of your relationship to your body. Mm. But I think we at least need to mention it. And do you have any thoughts for women on kind of,
I mean,
being comfortable with their changed bodies?
It's such a huge issue, and people have their relationship from before they have kids, whatever that is. I think we just have to try and be as compassionate as humanly possible and understand that the experience of our body is different and try and honor the magic and mystery that it has held human life, and it does look different and you are a different person, and that is a big thing to swallow.
How important do you think it is how partners, and again, this is so relationship specific, but I tried, especially while you were pregnant, to check in with you about how you were feeling about your body. What kind of language did you want to use?
Mm-hmm.
Like, am I allowed to call you big and just exclaim like, oh my God, you're so huge all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Like, did that feel fun and exciting, or did that feel threatening? You know, one thing I noticed from the partner's perspective is, like, your breasts are not an erotic zone for us right now.
Yeah.
They are still functional, doing breastfeeding, and when we do have sex, I don't touch them, stimulate them, suck them, like I would get a mouthful of milk. Some couples eroticize breastfeeding and include that in their sex life, but for you, like, that's for the baby, that's not for me anymore, and I've had a mourning period. Like, hey, I used to, like, touch your breasts all the time, and they're such a source of pleasure for me, and they're not for me anymore.
Right now. I mean, we don't know. That might change.
Well, I hope so. I definitely hope it'll change back. But, again, like, I've had to have a sense of patience and maturity and being like, I used to have access to your body that I no longer have.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I try to empathize with men of, hey, we used to have this kind of access to your body that I no longer have, and I have to go through a mourning period with that and a transition period. Trust it will come back. But I think that's one way I've noticed your relationship with your body change. Like, your breasts are now about breastfeeding. They're not sexual. Although some women can combine the two. But you haven't really cared that, like, your belly's changed a little bit. Although
I mean, I just noticed that I start to feel really sluggish and uncomfortable and kind of a little bit miserable if I don't move, if I don't get outside, if I don't exercise in some way. And as soon as I add those things in, it doesn't really matter what my body looks like. I just feel so much better.
So one strategy you did, instead of going to a play group where you just like sit around in a circle and watch the babies play, you started a Hike It Baby group, which is a national organization. And one of your things built into your schedule is a weekly hike with other moms.
With other moms and other kids. And that has been amazing. And then we started a forest kindergarten kind of forest playgroup. So I'm outside moving around with my kid and other moms and other kids. And that's been really, really lovely.
But it was a strategic move of what are the things you love and how do you build that into motherhood?
Yeah, being outside, being with my kids.
Because we went to some of those playgroups where I was like, hello, baby, how are you? And we were just like, this is killing me intellectually. But we're totally happy to go play in the woods.
Yeah, that makes me feel good and alive.
But if you're a musician, maybe baby music classes are for you. Like, you have to make motherhood work for you and your baby and that combination of things.
Totally. But I also feel like if I just put on music and dance for 10 minutes, I feel really happy. I've been doing that 7.5-minute workout. There's, like, an app you can put on your phone. You know, it's like, what can you actually realistically do? If I can do that twice, I feel like so much better. And it's not an unreasonable amount of time in certain moments. It's really challenging in other moments. But I think it's just understanding that it looks different. And how can you just bring, you know, dance parties with the family and moving is like one of the highlights of my life. And anytime the three of us are in, are just dancing around and moving or doing yoga together, I just feel like this is the most beautiful life ever. So it's finding ways of getting movement in your body. It doesn't actually, I feel like it doesn't matter almost what your body looks like. It's really about what you feel like. And so taking time to feel good in your body is an amazing investment.
And so I just want to conclude on one point. We might have to come back with this for the part three. but just to acknowledge part of the reclaiming sexuality and part of this kind of just emotional maturity is acknowledging how different our life looks with a child. And the family dance party reminded me, because we used to go dancing in the Castro to fabulous gay clubs and go out to drag shows at midnight. That's not happening right now. Mm-hmm. What is happening is going to aquariums and zoos. So our dates together now include a child, look really different, but we try to still make them function with that same amount of novelty and excitement and adventure. The things that worked for us as a couple, we're now making us work for us as a family. Like, our daughter says, are we going on an adventure today? Because we're so committed to this idea of taking adventures together, right? And so you can schedule date nights with just the adults and grown-up time, and that's really important. And when that happens will be a function of how much care you have to call in, how much you can afford a babysitter, all of those things. But even when you're hanging out as a family, what are your values within the relationship that you can continue to prioritize? So if you were a couple that went to really expensive restaurants and like trying new foods, you don't have to eat at McDonald's now that you have a baby. We go to restaurants right when they open at 5 o'clock. The people are happy to have a table full. Our kid can be in a fancy restaurant. And you know, we're not that fancy, but you know, like, we really like food. And so we go to places and we always bring snacks for her in the car later so she can eat. Like, we have not resigned ourselves to the kids' meal. Mm-hmm. Right. And so what are those values you can map forward now that two has become three, four, or more?
However, this is a really interesting point, because Esther Perel, who's a brilliant therapist, talks about how this can become eros redirected. She talks about how motherhood, because we have created this culture in America of raising children is this really incredibly important thing that is held above all else in a way, that a lot of mothers have brought all of what we might have called eroticism to raising children instead of to their relationship.
The sense of play and creativity and
bringing novelty, planning adventure, creating experiences that will create delight for your child. Bringing fun and play.
So is that a bad thing?
It's not a bad thing, but I think it's really valuable to look at, of if we can still bring all of that to our mothering, what would it look like to also bring that to our relationship and not to stop doing that, right. but to invite those same qualities of creativity, anticipation.
Because otherwise all planning. Of those qualities get directed into motherhood and then your relationship is functional and it's like, did you pay the bills? Right. When are we doing this? We're out of milk and there's no play, creativity, enjoyment, excitement
right.
with your partner and...
That yeah, has its consequences. And so I think absolutely we are loving going to the aquarium and the zoo. There's so much awe and wonder and delight, and we're experiencing that as a family, and those are some of just my most precious moments. And it's a really important and valuable way of framing those qualities and an invitation to see if we can continue bringing that into our couplehood, not just our family life. Ideally, they're both strong in both.
Right. And will change over the years. Yeah. Right.
So I think I just really want partners to know that this is a challenging transition and a challenging time for women to be both a mother and a sexual person. This is something that is kind of new, I think, for a lot of people for hundreds of years. It's just been motherhood, and then people, men have sex outside of the relationship to have a sex life. Like, this idea that women are able to embody both at this point in time is a newer human experiment, perhaps. And so we don't really know how to do it very well. But I just want, I want partners to try and bring as much compassion and patience and kindness to this as possible. I feel like a person that knows the value of sex and sexuality and, you know, considers pleasure to be a central value in life. And I am finding this really challenging to make space and time for this. So I just want people to have compassion for their partners, to know that this is hard.
Well, and for women to have compassion for themselves.
Absolutely. And that too, of course. But I think I just want to encourage partners to be central in the support game, to try and support women in doing what they need to take care of themselves. And also to know that carving out time for your coupleness.
Okay, so there's three, you're getting excited again, so I'm going to break it down for you. So there's three things here. For the woman / primary caretaker parent to really prioritize self-care, find the small time effective ways of filling up her pleasure well, feeling sexy again, feeling like a whole person, getting intellectually stimulated, all of that.
And that is, that looks different for everyone. It's a challenge.
You've said all that.
Yeah.
There's compassion, empathy, and support from the partner, mm-hmm. if there is a partner, mm-hmm. And taking as much parenting duties as possible to create some space, and just giving permission and encouragement. So saying, forget the dishes, I'll do them in the morning, go take a bath and take time for you.
Yeah. Essential.
And just saying that again and again and again.
Superhero status.
Giving permission.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then as a family, both celebrating this family time, enjoying the new kinds of dates, adventures, excitement you get in your weeks, and really going into that and enjoying it fully, while also redirecting some energy back to being a couple. And that could be 10 minutes on the couch together sharing exciting intellectual ideas. It could be, you know, a date night once a month, but in some way prioritizing the relationship as a couple in addition to being a great family.
Right.
So the three-pronged approach. So each individual in the relationship taking their responsibility seriously to reclaim sexuality and what that looks like. And then as a family, creating a culture both as a family, but it also supports a relationship within that.
Yes. Thank you.
You're looking at me like, I still have so much to say. We're going to wrap this episode up. We're going to keep this conversation going. And we want to hear from you guys, like, what have your struggles been in transitioning from being a couple to a family? What have your struggles been in going from being a sexy woman to a mother and then back again? Like, what worked for you? Dads, we'd love to hear from you. What was your experience of this? How did you cope with the loss of sex for a while? How did that transition? What kind of other things did you do?
What worked? What didn't?
What was your emotional experience of it? Like, we'd love to hear from you guys and what your stories are so we can continue this conversation. And we will continue this conversation. We are moving ahead with parenting. We're now parenting a feisty toddler. It's different than parenting a newborn.
Right. I can feel the changes are continuously like happening, and it does.
A totally different emotional landscape, and it'll be different yet again in a year from now. So we are here having this conversation. Charlotte has much more to say about this. We'd love to hear from you guys what your experience was. Find us at pleasuremechanics.com, drop us a line, share your thoughts. And again, this was a bonus episode, and there'll be another episode in the feed this week, so look for it. And it's about fetishes.
Just to keep things a little balanced.
I was like, we gotta give them something sexy and racy in addition to parenting. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
And we're the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.